I wrote the article in response to an article I read at CNBC.com titled, "Coffee Production Hurts the Planet. Scientists Think They May Have Another Way." The gist of the article is that scientists in Finland are pursuing a lab-developed or synthetic coffee-like beverage. The main goal of the research is to reduce coffee's negative impact on the environment. According to the argument, coffee's negative impacts on the environment include: the wet milling process uses significant amounts of fresh water. The process of drying, roasting, shipping, and brewing uses significant energy. And then the article mentions deforestation, but does not correlate coffee's production with deforestation. It misleadingly mentions Brazil's total deforestation without any mention of the amount of net deforestation attributed to coffee production. I emphasize net deforestation because the coffee tree is a tree capable of carbon capture, storage, and utilization. In fact, intensive cropping systems that effectively utilize nitrogen fertilizer can actually improve carbon sequestration. That, according to a recent review published in Frontiers in Environmental Science titled, "Appraisal of Carbon Capture, Storage, and Utilization Through Fruit Crops," by Sharma et al., published July 29, 2021. Quote, "Researchers have shown that the application of nitrogen supplement to an orchard enhanced the capturing of more carbon, thus lowering the net global warming potential in a California almond orchard. The key point I want to make in regards to the review is to think about coffee crop as a perennial plant, as opposed to a field crop. The distinction is important. Here's another quote from the paper. Perennial plants in forests, fruit orchards, and grasslands are efficient sinks of atmospheric carbon, whereas field crops are a great source of greenhouse gases due to soil disturbance, emissions of methane and nitrogen dioxide from burning straw, and field management involving direct or indirect emissions from fossil fuels." And again, that was a quote from Sharma et al., 2021. It's also important to understand that there is a lot of nuance in the argument of deforestation as it relates to coffee production. For example, coffee trees are native to Ethiopia, and some research indicates that where coffee exists in forests near farms, the forest is preserved, whereas elevations above where coffee is economically viable, forests are removed in favor of field crops. This happens because the coffee that's in the forest at lower elevations is economically viable. Farmers can use those coffee trees to produce coffee. The next point I want to make is that coffee production provides livelihoods for an estimated 2.5 to 25 million farms or farming households worldwide, according to the International Coffee Organization's 2019 Coffee Development Report. Lab-developed or synthetic coffee represents a direct challenge to the coffee farmer's existence. One of the points I made in the article is that now it's time to upskill, reskill, or transition struggling coffee farmers out of coffee. It's not because of the single revelation of scientists pursuing synthetic coffee. It's because synthetic coffee represents another in a long line of challenges to coffee production, such as advancements in robotics, machine learning models, aka artificial intelligence, etc. Smallholders need to either keep up with technological and informational revolutions, or they need to transition out of coffee to other, more suitable ways to make a living. I've written a few articles about this. My third and final point is that those developing synthetic coffee expressly hope to address the traceability problem of coffee. Here is another quote from the article. This quote is from Heiko Rischer, head of plant biotechnology at the Research Institute. Quote, "The innovation, synthetic coffee, has an impact on traceability and transparency of the process. This is often also a big problem in the coffee supply chain. So why do we care about traceability? We care because we want to create more value in the farmer's products in an attempt to get more revenue to the farmer. This is a bedrock of specialty coffee. Traceability highlights the specific farmer's role in producing a specialty coffee and thus contributes to the symbolic value of the product. This is one of the specialty coffee's superpowers and one of the ways it benefits smallholders." In Ted Fisher's book titled Making Better Coffee, published in 2022, he quoted Bill Hempstead as saying, "Specialty coffee has, quote, the largest transfer of wealth in the history of the country being Guatemala." Ted goes on to say that smallholding farmers increased their incomes and expanded their land holdings, leveraging specialty coffee. So fixing the traceability problem by producing synthetic coffee in a lab defeats the purpose because it directly competes with smallholder farmers. It fixes the traceability to smallholder farmers by replacing them. Will lab coffee take off? I don't know, but one market we can look at to get an idea is the growing synthetic meat market. Researchers at VTT aren't the only ones looking into synthetic coffee. In 2021, Seattle-based Atomo Coffee released a synthetic coffee as a ready-to-drink canned beverage they call molecular coffee. Atomo has raised $11.5 million to fund its research and development of synthetic coffee. There is clearly a demand for it. I recently started talking about a new topic called local consumption. Local consumption happens when coffee is consumed within the same country or region in which it was produced. It has a number of upsides that include economic, social, and cultural benefits. Check out my latest podcast episode at caffeinated.fm for more information about local consumption. If you are interested in more interesting quotes from, as well as links to, articles I referenced for this episode, please see the episode homepage, which has lengthy notes available. Now for the article. This is an adapted version of a post I made on LinkedIn. Quote, scientists in Finland are trying to come up with a sustainable, lab-grown alternative for the next cup of coffee, but the technology for producing it is still very costly. Now is the time to start transitioning farmers who simply can't make ends meet through coffee production into a different product or commodity. Even if lab coffee never catches on, those marginal producers will be better off producing something they can make a living from rather than sticking with an unsuccessful product. The following is audio from an interview I conducted with Johan Kui, who manages a coffee mill in the Karo Regency of Sumatra. In the interview, Johan discusses his focus on improving quality as a means to improve revenue. Johan works directly with farmers who are impacted by the coffee price crisis and sees firsthand how they are reacting to it, including farmers who are choosing to transition out of coffee. Conversations like these are invaluable in understanding the complexity and nuance of such problems.
One of the farmers, and you already talked to her, she kind of switched from coffee to carrots. And she was saying, like, you know, for coffee, she's kind of like downsizing her coffee farms, right? And focus more on carrots. And one of my goals through this training and through this, this Lao Cafe is that I'm hoping that I can somehow kind of trigger her interest again, you know, in like, okay, let's produce better quality coffee, okay? Because see, if we have farmers who are kind of like downsizing farms here in Karo, imagine what's going to happen in 10 years. The supply is going to keep going down. You know, supply and demand thing, right? I mean, you have lower supply, then you can sell for a higher price. Think about it. Well, if your supply is low, but the kind of coffee that you produce is like a 78-point coffee, do you think that's going to generate a good price? No.
Of course, it would be great if there is a coffee solution that works for them, but transitioning out of coffee should be on the table. Fewer coffee farmers may be a good thing because coffee production is too often unsustainable, from incredibly high water and energy usage at both ends of the supply chain, global transportation and shipping, agrochemical abuse, and so on. The CNBC article doesn't explicitly mention it, but part of the agricultural investment package should include reskilling some coffee farmers out of coffee. Transitioning farmers out of poverty into a sustainable mode of production, regardless of the product, is the goal. Farmers who are already having a hard time participating in the coffee market will have an even harder time competing with lab coffee that will likely be cheaper than their grown coffee. I spoke about transitioning coffee farmers out of coffee first in the article titled Improving Farm Gate Coffee Prices. This is a quote from that article. Not all impoverished farmers can succeed in integrating into globalized value chains. In those cases where they can't, they should focus on local markets or they should be assisted in alternative pathways out of poverty, from shifting out of the coffee industry entirely or even migration where possible. As a coffee professional, I don't necessarily want to see someone leave the industry entirely, but if it also means leaving poverty behind, then it's the right choice. In that article, I discussed the difference in value between the raw product produced by coffee farmers and the finished product produced by coffee roasters. But the underlying premise is the same. If the producer is unable to make a good enough profit from producing coffee, the option to transition out of coffee should be considered. That was me, Michael Wright, reading my article titled Transitioning Coffee Farmers Out of Coffee. If you are interested in reading more about the topic, check out the episode webpage for lengthy notes from various scientific articles I used. Thank you for listening.